You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
It's time to talk politics with Labour leader Andrew Little.
Yes, we are now joined by leader of the Labour Party, Andrew Little. Kia ora, Andrew. How's it going?
Kia ora. I'm very well, thanks.
Okay, that's good to hear. So the People's Mental Health Report was released this week, sparking a call for an inquiry into New Zealand's mental health concerns. People are being turned away at crisis point because there simply aren't enough resources to handle these things. So how does Labour propose to address these concerns?
Yes, we agree that there needs to be, they've described it as an inquiry, I would say at the very least a stock take. And I, you know, as I do public meetings around the country, it's interesting how at everyone I've done in the last, you know, three or four months, the issue of mental health has come up, and you get an amazing response, and then you get people talking to you afterwards about their experience or an experience of a family member or somebody they know. So I think there is something going on here about our mental health services. I don't know enough to know what the gaps are, except to know that it is pretty obvious that there are some gaps. A lot of it is gaps at the kind of the primary level and the community health support level, and I think we need to do a stock take and find out what those gaps are and then commit to a plan to meeting the shortfall. And I, you know, my commitment is that we will do that as a matter of priority in the early days of a new Labour-led government.
In terms of a gap in our system, I know you have mentioned there's a $1.7 billion funding hole that requires filling. Where will this money come from?
Yeah, that's the underfunding of health services generally over the last 6 years. We've committed to restoring that over a period of time. It'll take us more than 3 years. And that's money that is available right now to the government. It's just a question of priorities. The government is collecting enough tax revenue to meet the need to start to restore that shortfall in health funding. But what I can say is that we will make mental health a priority. It's not just those first line services that you have for anxiety conditions, depressive conditions. It's also addiction services and things like that that we know that there's a huge unmet need for, and I want to see us doing better in those sorts of areas.
But you've also mentioned housing and education as priorities, and then on top of that, Labour spokesperson David Clark also said that you have no plans to raise taxes, so won't you just end up compromising these other priorities in order to fund the mental health sector?
No, if you look at last year's, the budget for last year, when the government does a budget, they do their projections 4 years out. They were at that time projecting, or at least they had unallocated expenditure of roughly $1.5 billion in each of the years, starting this year and the next 2 years. Even since then, the government's tax revenue has got better. They're now generating surpluses that are quite significant. And so I've been very careful to make sure that any commitment I make can be funded out of the government's existing tax revenue. And that remains the case. And actually, the kind of surpluses that are being achieved not only enable us to start to put back together some of the things that this government has underfunded, but actually to repay debt that it's run up and to resume contributions to the New Zealand Super Fund. So we will continue to do that. One thing I'm not promising is tax cuts, and I think that is going to be one of the points of debate about this election. There are some people who would say, oh, good, the government's generating a surplus, then let's do these tax cuts, because tax cuts usually only favour the already very wealthy, and there's not that much in it for anybody else. But we've got these huge other areas where the government has reduced funding and underfunded, and we need to make sure that those gaps are not creating bigger social problems that cost us more in the future.
Right. 23% of the stories that made up that report also cited a massive strain on staff in the mental health sector. Is government-funded support a viable provision for them?
Yeah, I think that's about, you know, finding out where the gaps are. I think part of what's happening is too that people are, before they get access to mental health services, because they can't get, you know, the primary health care stuff and the community health support that they would ordinarily expect to have, they tend to be in a worse state by the time they turn up to a hospital, and that's putting a huge strain on staff. So that's why I think I don't want to make a whole heap of specific commitments about where we might sort of spend extra money, except I'm prepared to accept that we do need to spend extra money. What I do want to know is, and have a good picture of, is where those gaps are and a plan that actually starts to fill in those gaps over whatever period of time we think we can do it realistically in.
This morning we spoke to Mike King, one of the contributors to the report, and he told us that in New Zealand there's more of a late-stage intervention as opposed to an early-stage prevention idea. So what are your thoughts on this mentality?
Yeah, I've seen that in the report, and it seems to ring true from what I've heard from people. The people have come up to me at meetings and talked to me afterwards, and they've said that's exactly the problem, that there's a need now, while people have an anxiety condition or some kind of early stages of a depressive illness, but they can't get the help and support that they need. And then what you hear is that they're sort of in virtual crisis before they can get some help and support. And we've got to change that mentality. We've got to make sure that support and access to good mental health care is there in the early stages of, you know, somebody suffering, as opposed to when it's much later in the process and usually much more expensive to treat.
And the report also makes a few recommendations for appropriate measures that can be taken to address these concerns, one of which proposes the idea of a national education program. Is this something you'd take on board?
Yeah, I think, I mean, we've had some great awareness programs. Mike King has been at the forefront of some of them, and people like John Kerwin as well. But I think the more we can do to educate, especially young people, you know, who are just starting to face the rigors of life, about, you know, what a mental health condition looks and feels like and what help there is available there, and, you know, knowing that it's okay to put your hand up and ask for help if you're, you know, feeling anxious, if you're facing, you know, or been through stressful situations, then I think that's, you know, that's absolutely vital, and I think we've got to find opportunities to do that.
Right. Moving on, it was revealed that tens of thousands of immigrants will be prevented from coming into the country under a Labor government. What prompted this call?
Well, we've been saying for some time that there's been a huge mismatch in terms of skills that we're bringing in from overseas to meet, you know, to do work here, and the fact that there are people living here who cannot get work. And the way immigration policy has been run, certainly over the most recent years, is we've seen a massive increase in inward migration. That is putting huge pressure on, particularly in Auckland, where a lot of the migrants settle, putting huge pressure on infrastructure, you know, housing, on transport, on overcrowded schools, things like that. And we just need to take a breather. We just need to turn it down and take stock, or take time to, you know, build the houses that are needed, to work out the transport and better public transport that we need to accommodate the population that we've got now. So, well, we've been saying that, as I say, for some time. The government announced some measures that they think are going to help. They announced that yesterday, and I said, when you look at what the government's announced, you cannot work out what the impact is going to be, but there's got to be a serious commitment to reducing levels of immigration, while at the very least we take time to catch up.
And the overpopulation of Auckland in particular was cited as a reason for this announcement. Is instating an immigration cut solely on Auckland a feasible way to address this?
Well, we know that the level of inward migration, and because the bulk of people coming here settle in Auckland, that is a huge problem. We've got to it's growing the population of the city at a pace that we've never seen before, and putting huge pressure on the city. So, you know, we're not saying, you know, stop immigration forever, that's it, because we're a country that's dependent on it. What we are saying is that conditions certainly in Auckland right now are such that we've got to take some time to build the extra houses, to work out the transport, whether it's road, whether it's public transport, whether it's whatever, so that we can kind of get the city moving more effectively than it is now, before we say, yep, 70,000 extra people each year is workable, because right now it's not, it's way too many.
And this immigration, these immigrations plans are set kind of to target the work visa scheme. Who exactly falls under the category of working people that these plans will affect?
I think what the Silver Life said is, let's look at the 42,000 work visas that we're issuing each year. And it may cover the full gamut. You know, as I said before, we're a country that's been dependent on immigration. We've always relied on immigration to provide the technically skilled and senior skilled. But we're seeing work visas now issued, for example, to labourers, 6,000 work visas issued to labourers, when we have 15,000 unemployed labourers in New Zealand. So it's in that area of work visas that I want to target. Which means that the students who come here to study, not planning to do anything about that, not planning to do anything about our Pacific quota or about family reunification. Let's look at the work visas, because I know that that's an area where I think we can get a better match of the skills that we actually need, as opposed to the open sort of policy that we seem to have at the moment.
Right. And how will cutting back on immigration assist in addressing those issues of housing and infrastructure, as you mentioned before?
Well, it means we have less pressure, less demand, less pressure. Auckland itself is about 40,000 to 50,000 houses short of what it needs to accommodate the population that's here at the moment. That's what's driving a lot of homelessness, which is mainly evident by overcrowded housing in parts of the city. So we get to build more houses and we accommodate people who are already here. It is silly to say, yep, we're going to build, commit to 50,000 more houses in Auckland, while at the same time we're adding 70,000 more people a year, and we know we can't keep up. So it'll make a huge difference in terms of keeping the pressure off infrastructure that is already under huge pressure.
Mm. And lastly, you criticised the government's policy towards immigration, simply describing it as tinkering. What did you mean by this?
Because I don't think it does enough to achieve a significant enough reduction in the numbers of people coming here at a time when we can't accommodate them, and at a time when we appear to be issuing work visas to do work that I know out of work Kiwis can do. So that's and they can't even say what the effect is going to be in terms of numbers, and I just don't think they've taken the issue seriously enough.
Andrew Little, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you.
Cool, I'll catch you again next week.
Right,
you have a lovely day.
You've been listening to Andrew Little from the Labour Party. The Wire.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.